Please join me in a moment of silence followed by the sworn report.
Grant me the strength to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Workaholics Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who share their experience, strength, and help with each other. But then they solve their common problem and help others to recover from workaholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop working compulsively. There are no dues or fees for WA membership. We are self-supporting for our own contributions. WA is not aligned with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. It does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any cause. Our primary purpose is to stop working compulsively and to carry the message of recovery to workaholics who still suffer. Should we have a quick round of introductions? Or do we feel very loose? I think we've done that.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. I've asked Lynn if she would move the characteristics.
Characteristic of recovery. Mm-hmm. One, we were able to speak with phrases such as, I don't know, I was wrong, I made a mistake, I'm sorry, I can't, I need help, I don't remember, I don't understand, so what, who cares, compared to what? Number two, we were able to say, I'm hurt, I'm uncomfortable with what you said, I'm afraid, I'm sad, I'm lonely, I feel like goofing off, I feel silly. Three, we accept that others need not always be happy. We don't fight their feelings with logic or distraction. You should add, or blame. Four, we believe that many people can do all or most of what we can do, as well as we can do better. Five, we know that others have limits. We don't expect to predict the future or read minds. We know that failures and incomplete projects are part of the learning process. We realize that no matter how fast or efficiently we work, there are only 24 hours in the day.
We respect our body instead of fighting it. We realize that feeling ill or tired is part of the human experience. We rely on intuition and inner timing and rhythm. We accept that everyone may not like us. We can refuse responsibility or requests. We can say no without feeling guilty. We nurture ourselves and give from our overflow. We delay, delegate, and lower performance standards when needed. We realize that it is okay to be inconsistent. We find our own mistakes a continuing source of humor. While communicating, we notice people's stares and respond states. Excuse me. We notice people's states and respond to them rather than being solely focused on the matter at hand.
We value joy over efficiency. We understand the importance of rest and play. We think of work as part, but not all of life. We believe everyone has intrinsic value, whether they work or not. We realize we are valued by how we treat others, not by what we own or produce or by how hard we work. We know that people don't care how much we know until they know how much we care. We realize we can't push growth. We know we can't change, control, or rescue anyone. We have responsible expectations for ourselves and for others.
We live in the present without regretting the past or fearing the future. We believe that others who are part of a joint venture share responsibility for bad or good outcomes. We accept change, the unexpected, and conflict as part of life. We trust our developing relationship with our higher power, and we embrace our goodness and serenity.
Thank you. Would anyone like to volunteer to be a timekeeper?
I'll do it. Donnie, do you still have a timer?
Do you want a timer,
Peter?
Yeah, I need a timer.
So Peter is going to volunteer. And the format of this meeting is sharing our stories. We ask that we avoid crosstalk. Avoiding crosstalk means that when we speak, we address the meeting as a whole. We speak in the first person and do not give advice. Please do not share again until everyone who wishes to has had an opportunity to share it. We keep the 12th tradition of anonymity in mind, especially the principle of the four personalities. And why don't we limit this sharing to 4 minutes?
4 minutes.
Okay. And once again, the topic is sharing our stories. And who would like to start off with a little sharing?
You got the
time
on
I have something I can find.
I'm Sandy.
I'll go
first.
Hi, Sandy.
Sandy, workaholic. And I was a kindergarten teacher, and believe it or not, I made kindergarten more work. I had early birds and late birds, and what that did was extend the time that I had to work. I had a real pain at the easel. There was a slanted wall with a shelf thing. So I had real paint there for the kids to paint with. I made a lot of the things that I used for teaching. I took work home. I cut circles and stuff like that. I made home visits. So that's when I was working. I stopped working when I was pregnant with my daughter. And so I have over-volunteered. When she was little, I worked at the Alexander Lindsay Junior Museum, which is a nature museum, as a docent. I don't know. I always kept myself so busy. And in 1993, I wrote in my Overeaters Anonymous doing the step questions that I really needed to go to Workaholics Anonymous. But I didn't make it there until 1997. Okay, and that's when my parents were coming for a visit, and they have a tendency, my father's in the military, they have a tendency to give everything the white glove test. I was completely chicken little. I've never been in a place where I felt there was so much recovery and a chance for me to learn and be different. And these are, like, lateness is one of my big problems. And the adrenaline rush you get when you hurry. And I just wore myself out so I don't have good help now. So, that's 1 minute. Okay, thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
My name's Dan. I'm a recovering workaholic. I have worked many hours late into the night. There have been times that I've worked all night and the next day. The first time I remember staying up all night working was when I was in college. And I was a student association officer, and I'd play games in the student center, and then other people had to go back to dorms, and then I'd go to work. in my office, and there have been many times since then that I've worked all night. And lots of times where I work at 1 or 2 in the morning, or 8 or 9 in the morning, 8 or 9 in the evening, or, you know, just lots of time. And I've taken employees, I've had more than a full-time job. I also took on other volunteer opportunities at my church. I took on a couple of moonlighting jobs. I was involved as on the board, an officer in a professional association. And also, once I got into recovery, I took on service jobs. I chaired a couple of retreats. And was when I got into WA, I was a chairman for a large conference for another fellowship. And so it's like I did lots of things. And wasn't spending very much time with my family. Since coming into WA about 4 years ago, I've been able to cut down on my outside commitments. It's still a challenge for me, leaving at a reasonable hour. And so that's an ongoing thing. So one thing I put on my next picture is, arriving to work at 8 and leaving at 5. Thanks.
Thanks.
My name is Gordon, and I'm a workaholic.
Hi, Gordon.
I have a real problem with steps 8 and 9. Every time we read them every week, and we get to make the link in the list, that's okay. But 9, I feel like Moses in the Ten Commandments, where God says, "Thou shalt not kill." He knows that he's violated that command because I've not made amends to some people. The very first time I started my list, the top two people, I was just so afraid even to go to them. And a friend of mine in WA at that time said, "Well, it sounds like it might cause them some harm or some other people some harm." Yeah, I said, "Well, that's, you shouldn't, if it causes harm, then you shouldn't make amends, at least at this time." I said, "Okay, now who else?" And for years, I just really have been resisting making a real list. This past year, what I do for a living is a professional genealogy that treats people's ancestries. And I work in a library sponsored by a large church. And anybody who works there, and all people in there. And I saw this fellow one night at the library who had been coming for a long time. I knew him, and I just remembered. I said, "Man." And I went over to him and I said, "Hi." And he said, "Do you remember 23 years ago we worked for the same company and I found a mistake with your work? I complained about it and told them that it was either you or me. And the next day I came back and you've been fired." I said, "I felt so bad about that. I'm a 12-step program right now and I'm really, really sorry." He looked at me and he said, "You know something, Gordon?" He said, "I was looking for a change." And he said, when they told me about this disagreement that you had with my work, I took it as an opportunity to grow and move on. I went back to school and I did this and that. And I said, "You mean I've been, for 22 years, I've been avoiding eye contact with you when I see you and I've been feeling guilty?" I said, He says, "I'm really sorry about that." I said, And I've thought about it. And I just realized today what the reason for that was to make me realize there are other people lurking out there who should be on my list. And the first thing I do when I go back to my room tonight is start that damn list again. Thanks.
Thanks for the
time. Have more time, I could talk.
That's okay, I'm done. More time for the mouse.
I'm Harry, and
I'm Harry, and
I can tell a little story about myself. When I was in my 20s, late 20s, I had 5 children and very little money, and I was working as much as possible. I don't even have an idea how much it was. I had my own business, and I just worked all the time. And we were still kind of against the wall, and I was trying to build this business, and so I was swimming upstream. And I got a letter from a high school sweetheart, And it was really kind of touching that she was finding me. And she was telling me about her first child who was born missing one hand. And he was probably a thalidomide baby, I imagine. And she told me other stuff, and I could tell from what she said. She lived in Santa Barbara. She's a millionaireess. And I wrote her a very cold letter of response. It was just, I don't remember what I said. It was so, I remembered as being so unsympathetic that I blocked it out of my mind. But over the years, I remembered that letter. It was hanging over me like a hatchet ready to fall. And probably 25 years later, my daughter, my youngest daughter, lived not far from there, and my wife and I were going down, and I said, I'd like to go visit this woman. So I called her, and we went up and visited her. She had us for lunch. I was getting up my courage to apologize about this letter. And finally, she and I had gone off. She was showing me her garden, and I said, you know, felt so terrible about that letter. I said, it's just awful. She said, what letter? I never received a letter. Now the truth is, I don't know if she had blocked it out of her mind because it was so painful, or she was letting me off easy. But I felt pretty relieved after that. Thanks.
Thanks, sir.
My name's Marta. I'm a grateful recovering workaholic.
Hey, Marta.
And I was a precocious workaholic. Having interventions at the age of 9, hit my first real bad bottom at 16 when I tried to kill myself. And continued without the relief of this program through running 20 organizations when I was in college and being pretty crazy. And hit bottom in 1997 again. And the miracle of this program is that by and large, by showing up to meetings, by having a sponsor I can call 5 days a week after I've done prayer and meditation to check in about that, about what my plan of action is for the day, to have an abstinence plan and a recovery plan, to work the steps, and work the steps again, to do service, to do everything exactly how it says and those things in WA, and do the tools, there has been a lot of relief in my life. And the basic key indicator of that is that I'm still alive. The other key indicators beyond just that I'm still alive are that I actually am not constantly suicidal. That's like another blessing. I've just lived in this complete... I was completely insane when I got to the doors of WA. And the other miracle is how much grace there has been and generosity my higher power has for relieving the insanity of the disease. And it's really a 24-hour-at-a-time program, which I love that. I love how it brings me back to the present moment and how much grace there is in, and how much power there is in groups of people who have the same disease getting together and sharing stories and somehow making space for something bigger than ourselves. And for me, it has truly been a life-giving experience. And there's so much more willingness in my life now. And the thing that I've noticed recently that has been such a blessing is that someone said the more every year you've been in program, you get 1 second more of reaction before you have a reaction to an emotional experience. And but there's times when actually I don't even have the emotional reaction. Something happens at work and I'm just like, oh, well, okay, wow. Like just completely, I'm still the part where I'm like, oh, look, I'm not having the reaction. Hopefully even that part. Maybe I'll just kind of get over that whole thing too. But that's higher power's action, the miracle of the program in my life. I mean, that's really a difference. Somehow, higher power came into my brain and redid the neurons. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's like things have happened physiologically. I'm different. I've been relieved of a lot of the intense adrenaline cycling that I used to constantly be doing. And so I just wanted to share that part that, like, I've never met anyone who came to a WA meeting who said, I've worked the steps continuously. I show up for meetings. I do daily prayer and surrender. And I can't get recovery. I've never met someone who said that. So the tools and the steps and the fellowship really are miracle bringers. Thank you.
Thanks, Mom.
I'm Laura, I'm a workaholic.
Hi, Laura.
And basically my job in my childhood was to save my family, which was a big job because they were a big mess. And I worked very hard at that, and then I graduated from my family to my job being to save the world. And that has kept me really, really busy my whole life. And that's what brought me to WA, basically, because it's just a really big job for one person. And the other thing, the thing that brought me to WA in a very, I didn't know that when I came into WA, that that's what was going on, but my body hurt. I was in my mid-30s. I started WA about 6 years ago, terrified of it. I knew I was a workaholic. I used the word for a couple of years before WA, and part of my pattern was to recognize a problem and decide I was going to solve it on my own. So I did all the things that alcoholics do. You substitute, you know, work for alcohol, and, you know, no work after 5, no work after dark, you know, this and that. And, you know, it didn't work. I tried for years to make the perfect schedule. I had a friend I talked to on the phone. We tried to figure out a schedule that would work for us and we wouldn't be workaholics. But it's not about that. Who knew? So coming to Workaholics Anonymous, I don't know why, but I was absolutely terrified. And thank you, higher power. A friend of mine from another program was going to the meeting in San Francisco, so that gave me the courage to walk through that door. And immediately the tools started helping me and working for me in the fellowship. Being around workaholics who weren't, you know, who were in recovery. And I think if I hadn't come to Workaholics Anonymous right now, I would probably be physically disabled because I would continue to push my body beyond what it could take. I'm not sure that I would still be in relationship with my partner because being in a relationship with a workaholic is very unsatisfying. That's another thing that brought me in the door is that I could see how much pain I was causing her on a daily basis. And that really helped me. I couldn't see how much pain I was causing myself. But I could see how much pain I was causing her. And to be honest, even my cats, I mistreated my pets. I love my pets, but when I was really down on it in Workaholics Anonymous, I was very impatient. I was like, get out of my way, you know, instead of being kind to them. So a lot of amends to make, a lot of guilt to work through. But Workaholics Anonymous has helped me so much. And getting sponsors and working the steps has really also just been the thing. Being in the program has really helped, but once I started working the steps, I have so much more relief, so much more recovery. I once heard somebody say, the tools are for relief and the steps are for recovery. And I think that's really been true for me, that I do feel like my life is different. And sometimes I can be down on myself because it's not a straight line path. It's not just up, 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 because I've just been through a really hellish month where I can't blame anyone but myself for how bad I feel right now. I'm really overworked and overscheduled and feel yucky. But I also heard someone say that it's not how many times you fall down, it's that you pick yourself up one more time that you fall down, and that's recovery. So this weekend really picked me up. I feel much better than I did when I came. And I'm so glad to be here. Thank you.
Thanks.
I'm Sandy.
I'm Sandy.
In a non-program, there's the three A's, awareness, acceptance, and action. And this past exercise that we just did, where we drew ourselves and what we could do to make amends to ourselves and actions, and one of the things that I put on it was, you know, hobby time, particularly for me, sewing. And it just took the blinders right off of me because then I remembered what my sewing looked like. My sewing looked like I got up in the morning, I started sewing, I'm still in my nightgown. It's midnight now, I'm still in my nightgown. I haven't brushed my teeth, I've stayed at the sewing machine. all day and all night. The kids feed themselves. Somebody else can do the driving that day. I was absolutely workaholic in what I considered was my hobby or my my creativity. Whatever it was just sick. And it wasn't until we did that exercise that that awareness came to me. So I'm not even close to action, but this is helping me become aware of how I've done every single thing in an addiction, in an addictive fashion. And so as I look at that picture over there and think about going back to something that I used to think was fun and satisfying, how would I do that in a healthy way, in a way that's not abusive to myself and to those around me? And I'm really grateful for that, the scales falling from my eyes on that. Thanks.
Thank you.
I'm Gilda.
Hi, Gilda.
Hi, Gilda.
I'm really happy to be here. I had a difficult childhood. My parents were not well suited really for parenting. They loved us, but were not very skilled. And so I ended up depressed pretty much continuously. And so it turned out I was a good student. So it turned out school and, you know, I could do workaholism at school, and I figured that out in kindergarten and pretty much kept that going until I was 30. And selected a profession that would, you know, drive a normal person crazy and get a lot of praise for doing that. So, but part of me was healthy, and there's been I've been slowly, you know, backing away from that pattern, but not enough, and not with enough awareness of, I think. And it hasn't been successful enough because I haven't understood, because I need some tools, I think. You know, I need some tools. And they certainly appear to be here. I'm very new in the program. Haven't started doing, you know, really anything other than coming to meetings. But I immediately stopped talking on my cell phone in the car while it was moving, which was a very potentially life-giving decision. And I'm grateful for that. That's huge right there. I was, you know, doing this half an hour a day of, very dangerous. So that was a great gift. I am delighted to be here and recognize that. I have a lot of work to do, and when I hear the talk about abusing the animals, I think about my cats, and I think about my daughter, how I can be impatient and unkind. I'm grateful to recognize it. I'm grateful to recognize the price is very high. I had an incident in the last few weeks with a project at home that I set up. It was crazy making. You know, beginning of school, time of year, I was going to move 3 rooms of furniture in the house in one day, which makes me insane, and to have the house be out of order because that calms me. I woke up at the WA meeting 2 weeks ago and realized, wait a minute, I've set this thing up, this is insane. And one of the people in the group talked to me afterwards, and I tried to modify the thing, it didn't succeed. And what I've learned in like 2 weeks since is that the price is still very high, just for something as small as that, I've paid a tremendous price. And stress, and anxiety, and sleeping badly, and crankiness again. Anyway, it's delightful to be here, it's delightful to have the tools, it's delightful to see people who are in recovery.
Thanks.
I miss speak, but I think I'll remain anonymous. I identify as a work bulimic, and I was thinking as people were speaking, I was remembering back to college. I had straight A's my first semester in college, and went very much downhill from there because I brought up expectations for myself. I went into this pattern of, well, I'm here for the learning. I don't worry about my grades, and I do things, study things I wanted to, not go to class. in general, do a lot of things to self-sabotage. And I think that's what's really dangerous for workaholics, is that we give ourselves such a handicap that we can then point that, the reason I didn't get a straight A is because I didn't study, I didn't start studying until the last minute. And if I had studied earlier, I could have gotten a straight A. And it just that whole pattern of finding something to blame so you don't, so you have an excuse to fail if you do fail. Somebody was talking about cats. Families. I did not have a family member to complain that I was ever home. I haven't been healthy enough to have any relationships that lasted very long, or any relationships at all since college. Only one that lasted more than a few months. I bet I had a cat for about 6 months. And I had a tendency to work late. And when I came home, I got a lecture. The cat meow until he got hoarse, which you'd think that's a hard thing for a cat to do. But I guess, I don't know, just at times when I'm a sick work bulimic, I think I just want to be cured of the work anorexic side and become a real workaholic. And I think a lot of us are deceived that that's what we can do.
Thank you.
I'm Bob.
Hello. My workaholism goes way back to grade school, where I was always looking at the school. I was looking for a newspaper, writing news articles. And then when I was in college, I was running a travel agency. And when I was in grade school, I was running a speed reading school. It goes on and on. And I usually have a job and a business at the same time. I couldn't just have one. And I figured out what I was getting away from is my feelings about being disabled, you know. And I'm still at it because I've been running a law practice. I made the sad mistake of getting involved with too many different kinds of law. And I had an assistant who I drove was physically ill, and he quit. That got me depressed, and now I've got to take myself by the throat and do the steps and pick up the pieces and try to salvage my life. So it's really good to be here in this beautiful place.
Thanks.
Well, I'm Peter. Peter, recovering workaholic. And I've told many people here pieces of my story, so I won't kind of repeat that. But in the earlier meeting, the topic was procrastination, and that hit me with a knife, because what came to mind was my lateness in picking my son up from daycare time and time again. Very painful part of my past. Painful because I can identify with him, being the only kid left in the room, and I'm the last one coming to pick him up. I clearly have an awareness to make there, both to him and to myself. But, there's been a lot of pain with my addiction. There's been an awful lot of pain.
And in some ways, that's harder to deal with than the life-threatening stuff. There's life-threatening aspects of this, but even worse for me than the life-threatening stuff is the stuff where I have to face this kind of emotional pain. So I'm really grateful for the program. I'm glad I'm back here. The amends that I plan to make for the thing I mentioned earlier actually is partly to attend more meetings. Search of serenity. Become more regular. So, grateful for the program. Glad you are all here. And really understand that my recovery depends on you all. As well as on myself and the higher power of the fellowship. Has just been a lifesaver. So, and it helps me find acceptance to get past the emotional stuff. So, that's all I have to say.
Thanks.
Thank you.
My name is Donna. I'm a workaholic.
Hi, Donna.
I didn't used to be a workaholic. I was, my dad was one, so I knew what it was. And I never married one. And so I recognized that. And it came as a big shock to me that all of a sudden I heard coming out of my mouth the same thing that I had heard my father and my husband say. To my daughter, probably, and other people, you know, if you would just help me, I wouldn't have to be doing all this. That was the one that really, really was the light bulb when I heard myself say that. Because that's what I heard all my life. That I never did enough, because if I would talk, they would be on vacation, we could go to the beach, we could do this or that. But, so anyway, I guess what I would say is that I have really not done a very good WA program. However, I really believe in what I heard, suit up and show up, do the best you can, keep coming back. And I can say that today I have a lot of clarity. I can really listen to people and focus. I have made huge strides. I can really see recovering myself. Even though, when I compare this and some other 12-step groups, when I compare the number of meetings I attend, the number of everything that I do, and my WA program to other things, it's like minuscule. This is really wonderful, coming once a year, or once every 3 years, or whatever it is, to a big meeting there. Looking forward to using the phone meetings to up my phone program. So I guess what I'm saying is there has been for me some recovery, even though I don't do this program in English, close to perfect, or near perfect. And I appreciate the serenity in my head and self-esteem that I have. The life that I live today, I just really, really, really appreciate it. I have a ways to go, but I'm absolutely not lost. And I look like I'm really identified with well on the sign machine, because I could, when I paint a room, I don't do anything. It's like, don't get between me and my computer. Do not get me between me and the computer, or whatever it happens to be, unless I'm working, that would be me. Either 24 hours a day or 24/7. And being retired now, there would be no stopping because I wouldn't have to ever go to bed. I wouldn't have to ever get up at 6 o'clock anymore. I could just kill myself. And it's not really happening. I have people tell me that I'm so disciplined. I'm so this and I'm so that. And I really do see discipline in my life. I really do see improvement. I'm leaving here intending one more time to call everybody in the room when I get, and I did make some phone calls this last year. Maybe you might have gotten a phone call from them. I did get a sponsor last year. I'm intending to get a sponsor again this year. There were some reasons that I didn't get along all that well with my sponsor, but I did benefit from it, so I'm going to do that again. I'm glad that I could come back. I'm glad that I attend my wonderful meeting with sometimes just two of us, many years with just two of us. Two is better than none, and anything I do is better than nothing. So my big thing that's up on the wall over there is perfectionism.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Tom.
I'm Matthew, I'm a workaholic.
Hi, Matthew.
I started in another program for the wrong reasons, but the program and the people got me straightened out after a year, and worked quite hard at the steps. And after about 4 or 5 years, by accident, I stumbled onto reading in a book for that program, which had an outline of various addiction programs, including eating disorders. And I went down through that. I said, well, I like food. That's all right, but I don't think I've got this problem. But if I substituted work for food, I would have a perfect description of my real problem, which is work. A love of work, an infatuation with work. And that other program has one of its characteristics that you need to be needed. And that's exactly where my work and the other program don't just overlap or coincide, they are one. So I still go to that program valuably and work that, and I'm working this. However, all I keep doing is substituting one form of activity and work and worship of work and activity for something else. And so I'm a serial workaholic. Just go from one thing to another, thinking I'm leaving the other thing, I'm getting rid of the other thing, or dropping it, and it's just a ruse. And I keep kidding myself this way. And I ride that bicycle up and down the hill and over Dale, and it gets me in a circle. And I wouldn't argue a bit with the point that was made earlier that if you do the program 100%, you will get control, at least. I haven't probably done it 100%, and I still live with a problem. I have work on a pedestal, or activity on a pedestal. It's a little portable pedestal, you know, towing along behind me all the time, ready to put something on it. The work is just on it all the time. I just change the characteristics of the subject. When I was raising my family, I was actually carrying on an extramarital affair with my family because I was in love with my work. So, but there is hope in the program. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Doug. I'm a workaholic. Basically, more than being defined as a workaholic, I'm fearful, because workaholism is just one manifestation of fear for me. As far as I was thinking about it, I always liked the simple sharing of your story of like what it was like. I think I finally have got it, so I'll just start with that piece. What it was like was I grew up in an environment where I responded in a fearful manner to what was going on around me. And basically what that meant was a lot of worrying in my head and a lot of blaming, a lot of judging. So having developed those skills as a young kid, I continued on through graduate school to be able to, you know, be successful at some level in various things and go on to have kind of look good profession type things, and it gradually got worse in the sense that I would be in a profession or be doing something, and I would run into the frustration of not being able to control situations, which just life, I guess, in short. And so, ultimately, what happened was. And I would go to points of depression and anxiety, and mainly the depression were the big cues that something needed to change. And then most recently, I was in a teaching position, and it just got overwhelming to me in terms of the depression and anxiety. And so I was 12-stepped into this program, and I'm very grateful for that. And it's given me, let's see, so what it was like, what brought me here. So the depression brought me here, and what it's like today. And today it's different in the sense that I recognize I have a lot of tools. I'm in some other 12-step programs, and there are different tools here, but some tools are similar. And those tools help me to live life so that I'm connected with my fellows and my higher power more so than I have been in the past. And be able to approach work in a manner that builds my self-esteem, builds my trust in God. And it's a very slow process, and at times a very painful process, because it means letting go of all the things that had worked for me in the past. So anyway, thank you.
Thanks.
I really appreciate this gathering, and several kind people have asked me how it's going, kind of being the first meeting and stuff. And I guess I just want to say that it's really complicated. I feel like there's a lot of hope here. And I really appreciate the honesty and everybody sharing. And so many people are outgoing, and that's really nice. I feel like there are some people that I can talk to and that sort of thing. I'm really pissed off because I hoped I'd come here and find out this wasn't what I was supposed to do. and that's not what I'm finding out. So I'm really mad about that, and I think just the way that the whole thing has been run in terms of an emphasis on the creativity and spontaneity and so forth is just very helpful to me. I've been in another 12-step program for about 10 years, and so I was grateful to have that as a foundation, but it's really clear to me that that this thing it runs really deep, and I've probably used it since I don't know, as long as I can remember, and I'm tired of it. I'll pass.
Thanks. We probably have about 15 minutes of sharing left before we go into other items in the meeting, which means probably not everybody can share, so if anyone has any burning desire, step on up.
Sort of the story. I really have hit bottom with my codependent behavior. And I had to do that first, it seems like. I think that was the smoke and mirror that I put up, but I really have written my first step. Because the thing that's come to me is when I was young, so creative. I was just, you know, my world was very challenging. I was in three different homes by the time I was 9. So the issues of feeling very stupid and very unwanted are immense. But I still had figured out coping skills to feel happy about my life, honestly. And creativity was one of them, and it was so close to me, and I just did it freely. But certain things happened, I think, that made me very afraid of my creativity. And I kind of bought into that. That was nice, but that's not what is very valuable. So, you know, in order to get approval and self-esteem and prove that I wasn't stupid or crazy or unlovable, work. You know, just do a really good job, be really good. And I covered up my creativity by using all of that energy to rest. Which of course created huge amounts of debt in my personal life. And I don't mean just money, but just debt. But the profound awareness, I want to say the policy part is, even if I'm calm, I went into a WA meeting, I don't know, probably 2 years ago maybe. And I kind of got the idea that maybe I might be a workaholic. It was like symptoms. Like I was behaving like a workaholic. But because I've hit so much bottom, the codependent, and I know that I heard myself say, you know what, I understand work. There's this thing to do, and it makes sense. And I would rather just hide in work. It feels really good just to be there rather than try to cope in relationships or face things. But I walked into the meeting again. That's what I love about this meeting. And another program, it's so positive oriented about progress. And the people just let our things get wrong. And it did so much to help me. It's so sweet. And I'm so, so, so grateful. Thank you.
Thanks for the pleasure. My name is Carl, and I'm a workaholic.
Hey, Carl.
Hi, Carl.
So, you know, the thing about the apple, you always go back for the second bite. So that's sort of my dilemma, is that, you know, sort of, I had a career in academia, and I retired, and went off to Hawaii, and I got bored, and moved back to California, and now, sort of, for various reasons, including financial reasons, now I need to start a second career at my advanced age. This time in industry. So I need to get a job. So now, of course, my finances are set, but I don't have to get a job immediately. And I'd like to have an interesting job. So my first job is a pre-job, and I figure out how to market myself. So I've been around, going around to all these conferences, a bunch of conferences, including conferences in Europe this summer. And I've written 11 articles for the Wikipedia in my field and related fields. And so I'm sort of doing that and trying not to do it workaholically. With a greater or lesser degree, and one thing I've learned is I can't do this perfectly. And so therefore, it's important really to have step one to be aware that I can't do it perfectly, because if I'm aware of the possibility of error, there's the possibility that I can correct it sooner. And it's also really nice to have a wonderful partner who's also in this program, because she could say, nee, 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 nee. Guess who's becoming a workaholic? Both of us. So that helps too. And it really is wonderful to have the kind of vocabulary to be able to talk to somebody about these kinds of issues who sort of understands, because she's got them too. And so I'm really grateful for that. And it's interesting. And I'm pleased to see the development of this program. Because it's the usual thing that, you know, if there's something to be done workaholically, it's the program, we can do that too. And so it's really challenging, this whole business about activity addiction. And the humor helps immensely. If all else fails, laugh. And I'm really grateful for that and the tools. And who knows, this is an exciting time to be alive. And I'm going to try these things. And the thing is to not put all my little pennies on one bet. Instead, you know, I'm going to try this, and I try that, I try to learn a little bit about each thing. So I just had this little adventure in the Wikipedia, in which some guys, hardcore guys in physics, decided to characterize my character. They decided that I was over the hill, senile, and a few other things. All this, usually you had to wait for people to die to find out the information about this. You'd find out the letters they sent to each other privately. These days, it's sitting out there in public on the internet for all to see. And so all you can do is laugh. But if there's another thing I can do. I'm going to give a talk at Stanford on the present and future of the Wikipedia in academia. In which case, I get to share these wonderful things with my colleagues. Thank you.
Thanks, Carl.
Hi, Terry.
Hi,
Terry.
Okay, hi, Terry.
Something Carl said reminded me of an exercise that we've done here on Saturday night, which is the laughing exercise. I don't know if it's on the calendar for tonight, but interesting thing during this last year, the exact situation, but things were extremely serious. And it may have been when I was in very deep grief over the loss of my cat, who had been with me for almost 20 years. Four states and probably six or eight cities. Through a lot of recovery and a lot of crazy stuff. And at one point, I think Peter was with me, and I said, why don't we just do the laughing exercise? Mm-hmm. And I would have never thought that. You know, just something to change the atmosphere, to change the mood. So that was a gift to learn that. Thank you.
Thanks, Terry.
Thanks,
Terry. My name's Mary.
I'm
Mary.
And I'm just really, really grateful to be here because there's so much power in numbers. You know, I always think there's power in food because you can nourish yourself, but there's something about being in a beautiful setting and in a location where everyone here has different facets of this disease. That's not the good part. But that we can share our stories and really help each other. So I've had a recent understanding of my problem. And I've had a slip, like you wake up one day and you realize, oh my God, I've been workaholic for a little while here. And how do I get back into not being in that state, knowing that at one point I was in a better position. And I'm actually really grateful to have a sponsor to point something out that I didn't know before, and I've been in the program for a handful of years, that when the disease manifests itself, or any kind of ism, manifests itself in where you're weakest, which in my case is work, that means that if you go back to the time a lot earlier than that, you've lost the connection with your higher power. And so then I thought, well, wait a minute, like 2 months ago, I had this wonderful relationship with my higher power and I was sleeping. Everyone in my meeting knows that I have problems sleeping. And what had happened was, I remember thinking, oh, I'll just finish washing the dishes, I'll get to bed half an hour later. Not a big deal until half an hour. Oh, I overslept or I listened to music a little too long while I was in bed waking up, and I miss my moment to meditate, I'll do it tomorrow. And it was those subtle things that, because we're never in a certain place all the time, we never arrive where we are. We're either moving towards our goal or away from our goal every moment. I've learned that through yoga. Every day, your body's not where it was yesterday, you're not moving forward, you just saw where you are. So, every choice I make, at every moment, at every time, is either moving towards recovery or it's moving away from recovery. And it was just very powerful to understand that. So, So I just wanted to kind of share that with you and thank you guys for being here, because, you know, waking up, going for a walk, being interrupted. Marty, you just showed me that that I can do step work, not linearly and not in lists, and not on my structured white piece of paper with my black pen in my very, you know, very well written kind of writing that I, you know, do in my own field. So this is a way of moving towards recovery. Anyway, thank you guys.
My name is Scott, and I'm a workaholic, and I'm a relative newcomer to this program. I've been going to meetings about a year. I am the oldest of four children in an alcoholic family from the Midwest. In another program, they talk about becoming codependent or para-alcoholic, taking the characteristics of the disease without necessarily taking up the drink. For me, that was important because I started behaving like that when I was very, very young. I kind of ended up being my mother's emotional support from a real early age. I'm also alcoholic and an addict. My primary addiction is sexual addiction. I started acting out at probably age 5 or 6 with sex or self, which was my coping mechanism for getting to sleep at night and soothing myself. And my family, very alcoholic. There were 4 of us kids, and although I was the oldest, there's only 2 of us left. I lost a brother who took his life, and a sister who died of cancer a few years ago. Anyway, I'm a latecomer to Workaholics Anonymous. I've been going to meetings because I know that's the, you know, basic step zero is, you know, you show up and figure out in 10 meetings and you listen. And I've been struggling a little with probably the step one thing. Most of my dysfunction in work centers around time-related stuff. I have a lot of trouble with time. I don't even want to say managed, but just using time wisely, being able to do what I say and what I do, being on time and productive, right? Procrastination, that's a big one. I also have trouble with focus, you know, the ADD sort of thing, just being able to, wanting to do something, wanting to do it, can't do it. Anyway, so when I came to this program, I wasn't sure that I fit, because my idea of workaholic was somebody who was focused and worked aggressively and hard, you know, with tremendous endurance, you know, for 60, 70 hours a week. So actually attending this conference has been very helpful to me. The big session on procrastination, listening to people talk about other aspects of this disease, and talking about I don't want to say the difficulty of getting a handle on it, but just the idea of, struggling with realizing the powerlessness in that step one, and the increased awareness, because part of the early pain in this program has been just more awareness of how unmanageable it is, and I can't seem to do anything about it. You know, so I've been coming to terms with the unmanageability and my powerlessness. Anyway, I'm grateful to be here, grateful for people who have shared, and I feel a deeper sense of belonging, you know, based on what has been so generously shared.